Thank you, Jillian. Today we will hear a talk on Step 11. Please give a warm round of applause to Gordon C., who will talk on Step 11. Thank you, Gordon.
Hey, good morning, everybody. How you doing? My name's Gordon. I'm an alcoholic and an addict. And it's my privilege and a pleasure to come in and share a little information on step 11 with you. And to do that, I got to tell you a little bit about myself, how I got here. Well, I drank too much. I don't suppose anything like that happened to you folks. But I came in here under duress, and I just got through celebrating birthday, 44 years. And here's the deal. I got sober on leap year day. And this year, we had a leap year, February 29th. And only one other time have I had a real February 29th fall on the evening of my home group. And that did this last Thursday. And it was a big deal for me. But on the odd years, I got back at you. I celebrated on both months, February and March 1, you know, which, and so I enjoyed that on the off years as well. So, and I tell you what the old timers told me about this kind of time on the program. I was brand new, and old timers always used to come up with that line. I'm sure you've heard it. Hey, if anybody can do it, if I can do it, you can do it. And I didn't want to hear that. I was looking for somebody with 30 days. How do you do that? And then after 30 days, I was looking for somebody, you know, how do you do 6 months? And then after 6 months, I said, God, I don't know if I can make a year, man. This is just more than I bargained for. And because, see, I was looking for a deal. I got intervened on, and I was looking for what the deal was in this program. And the deal to me was you were going to teach me how to drink without the consequences. And nobody in this program knows how to do that. And of all the people I watched go out and come back in, every one of them to a person that survived long enough to come back in said it always got worse real fast. Nobody ever in the 44 years I've been in this program watching people go out and come back in, did anybody ever said it got better? Because I was looking for that person. If I could find that person, I might just follow him back out. But and I fought this program for 3 solid years. I don't recommend it. I stayed sober on Fear Fellowship and White Knuckle Sobriety for 3 blasted years till I finally decided to surrender. And how that surrender happened was at a meeting in my birthday month out in Portland, Oregon. And there was 2 things that happened there. There was somebody showing an old 16 millimeter movie of Bill Wilson explaining the 12 steps, and the blasted movie reel, old 16 millimeter clackety clack belch and growl projector, and spliced in a million different places, and the picture jumping all over the place, and poor color too. It was archival stuff, and the camera zeroed in on Bill's face. And he said, I think I can remember the words correctly. He said, when the newcomer comes through those doors of AA for the first time, he's looking for 2 things. He's looking for freedom and a place to belong. And man, I was in the deal. That I will never forget. On the third birthday in this program, listening to Bill Wilson say that off an old 16 millimeter movie. The second thing that happened is it was at a mini conference, and they had a guest speaker whose name was Dr. Paul O. Now, I go back far enough, I got sober on the 3rd edition of the Big Book. I don't know if anybody around here has as well. And in that 3rd edition, back in the stories, there was a chapter called Doctor, Addict, Alcoholic. And that chapter, which was written, I believe, back in 1976, and I got into the program in 1980, That chapter was written to address people with dual addictions. It was the chapter that allowed the alcoholic and the drug addict to find a place inside the halls and tables of AA. And that chapter became underlined and marked up like nothing else you ever saw in your life. Everybody had page 449 underlined and highlighted. As a matter of fact, if you go to Dr. Bob Smith's address in Akron, Ohio, it's box 449, Akron, Ohio. Page 449 was the deal. And in the new edition of the fourth edition, they've relegated his story to not say Dr. Alcoholic Addict. The chapter is called Acceptance Was the Answer, and page 449 has been changed to page 417. I want to read it from it, just a paragraph. He said, "Acceptance is the answer to all my problems today. When I am disturbed, it's because I find some person, place, thing, or situation, some fact of my life unacceptable to me. And I can find no serenity until I accept that person, place, thing, or situation as being exactly the way it's supposed to be at this moment. Nothing, absolutely nothing happens in God's world by mistake." Now, some people will misquote that and say, "Nothing happens in God's world by accident." No, it doesn't say that. It said, "Nothing happens by mistake." And I'm letting that be an introduction. And Dr. Paul was a great speaker, humorous and serious at the same time. And it was my privilege to sit in front of that man back in 1983. He spent the rest of his retired doctor's life going around the country spreading that news and making it acceptable for people with dual addictions to come into the program like me. So at age three, I started to accept this program and I decided I wanted what you had. And I went about to figure out how this thing was done with the steps. And it wasn't until I was 7 years sober that I got into anything that would be akin to step 11, active prayer, active meditation. I kept coming across the ABCs at the end of our preamble, where we admitted we were alcoholic, our lives had become unmanageable. B, that probably no human power could have restored us to sanity, and C, God could and would if he were sought. And my sponsor taught me that was the key. Finding a higher power and the God of your understanding, whatever that happens to be. So if we're going to talk about getting into prayer and meditation, well, first thing we're going to come face to face with is a higher power and the God of your understanding. In my research, I'm going to offer you some places to go and look. And one of them is a book called Language of the Heart. And it's nearly all of Bill Wilson's essays for the Grapevine. He wrote over 150 articles for the Grapevine. He wrote more for the Grapevine than he did in the Big Book and the 12 and 12 combined. And I found in here what I was looking for. And it's from the April 1961 edition of the Grapevine, where Bill Wilson's title of the article is God as We Understand Him, The Dilemma of No Faith. And he states in this article, "The phrase God as we understand him is perhaps the most important expression to be found in our whole AA vocabulary. Let me run that by you another time. The phrase God as we understand him is perhaps the most important expression to be found in our whole AA vocabulary. And that's from the chief himself. The most important words in all of our AA literature. And then he goes on to say, within these five significant words, God as we understand him, there can be the positive assurance that each of us may choose their own. For all who deny or doubt a deity, these five words frame an open door over whose threshold the unbeliever can take their first step into the realm of faith. So, in order to stay sober, I learned I had to find some kind of power outside myself. I didn't have a problem with God. I just felt God had a problem with me. I came into this program at war with God. How could you let a nice guy like me fall into this trap? And here I am, realizing that the biggest thing I can do in life is be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've come to believe it's true. So, on discussing the steps, I believe, and you don't have to believe that, but I believe step four through step 10 are steps of action, physical action, dealing with other people and sponsors. And I believe that steps 1, 2, 3, and 11 are what keep us sober, and we keep reviewing those. I was taught meditation by a Trappist monk. Now, I'm not suggesting that. That's just how it happened to be. He was mentoring a friend of mine out here in Seattle U. Paul was my friend's name, and he invited this guy, this Trappist monk, out to Seattle for a specific project. And the Trappist monk's name was Thomas Keating. I don't know if you've ever heard of him, but he founded the centering prayer movement. And centering prayer is a form of meditation that he taught. It's Christian oriented, but it's based on what Father Thomas said was every major religion in the world has a form of doing this. And the form is for meditation, his premise is this: God's first language is silence. All the others are poor translations. So we talk to God in silence, the meditation part. Now, down on those ABCs at the end of our preamble, God could and would if he were sought, Father Thomas taught me that as soon as one begins to seek God, God allows itself to be immediately found. So there's nowhere you really have to go. God is closer than breathing, closer than your heartbeat, closer than your thinking, closer than feeling. And I didn't know that. And how I got to know Father Thomas, there was a retreat being held. This friend of mine, Paul, had organized it and had invited me in after to meet Father Thomas ahead of time. And there were about eight or nine of us who sat on the floor around a coffee table prior to the retreat, and Thomas was telling us what his mission in life was to share. What was to take meditation out of the monastery and give it to the people. And that was his sole mission in life. He lived to be 95, and he worked incredibly diligently to we were all amazed at how fast this movement went worldwide. And it's the form of prayer I use in our 11-step meeting with the 164 group out of New Jersey. And the rest of these step 11 meetings that I facilitate myself. Well, I went to this retreat, and Father Thomas would have 15-minute blocks of time where you could sign up to have a one-on-one with him. And I did that, and I got into a very small, but Father Thomas was like a 6'6", big, long drink of water, tall and skinny. And we sat chair to chair, knee to knee with this guy, and I decided to break my anonymity. And I told him I was 7 years sober and I had no clue on how to do meditation. And he didn't answer me at all. He kind of looked off into space after I broke my anonymity and told him I was in AA. And he said, you know, kind of like this, he was, when the spiritual history of the Western world is finally written, it won't be complete without a chapter on the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. You could have blown me over with a feather. And so I asked the obvious question of, are you in recovery? And he says, oh, no. No. I said, well, how is that working? And he says, the spiritual journey doesn't begin without admission of powerlessness and unmanageability. And the 12 steps is probably the greatest contribution to spirituality in the 20th century. Again, you could have knocked me over with a feather. And he says, that's what we do in the monastery. And from then on, oh, and he said, someday I'm going to write that book. And he did. It's called Addiction, Centering Prayer, and the 12 Steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he's being interviewed by somebody with 20 years in the program on how we do this. And he said, centering prayer is a great method of doing the 11th step. Not the only one, he says, I just offered as a method because I admire the 12 steps as being the spirituality gift of the 20th century. So that's began me on my journey. I didn't start the 11th step until I was 7 years sober and met this guy. And I saw him on numerous occasions after that. And I was able to see him 2016, 2 years before he died. I had a personal audience with him, and he remembered all his days in Seattle. And it was a beautiful farewell. And before I left, I knelt down in front of him. I said, I'd like your blessing. And he put his hands on my forehead, like the laying on of hands. And he said a bunch of things that went on for about 30 seconds. I can't remember what they were, but the final words were, and bless this good man for the work he is about to do. I had no clue who he was talking to. But I find myself in front of this meeting. I think I understand what he was talking about. And I've been called upon to talk about centering prayer and the 11th step. So, when you're going about meditation, the key is to find silence. And to find two times during the day to do this. And Thomas expressed two times. If you can't do two, then do a long one time. But the two times, the 20 minutes seem to be the minimum amount of time one should spend in meditation, and to find a place where you can be alone. Now, the first time I tried this, I thought 10 minutes was an eternity. I didn't know how I was going to do this for 20 minutes. And how do you stop all that chatter in your head? You know, holy mackerel, I can't empty my head. Well, first of all, Thomas, don't try doing that. It's not possible to empty your brain. He taught that the imagination is a perpetual motion machine, it never shuts up. Even in your sleep, I see some nods of heads by people who've experienced this. The question is what to do with the thoughts when they come in. And he suggested finding a so-called sacred word of your choice, can be almost anything. love, peace, serenity, and whatever you happen to be. So when you become attracted to thoughts or captivated by thoughts, it's like when you leave your silence and you get sucked into your thought and you're off on this thought tangent, you silently introduce the sacred word to bring you back to your center. Hence the name of the meditation is centering prayer. The center is the God that lives and dwells within all of us, whoever that is to you. So we pick a sacred word, and we silently introduce, close our eyes and silently introduce it at the beginning of our meditation period, and we only come back to us if our thoughts, if we become engaged with our thoughts. Now, thoughts will come and go. At the very beginning, they will mostly come. And the idea, and you will become attracted to them, attached to them, and you've got to bring yourself back. Don't let that bother you. In the beginning, that's all I did was my sacred word, holy mackerel. I can't calm down. And that, if you're new to it, you will find yourself absolutely besieged and bombarded by unwanted thoughts, but you let them go. You let them go. To become engaged with them is to become sucked into them, that you do. And all of a sudden, you find yourself, you know, in centering prayer, the answer to the world's problems always come to me only in centering prayer. Why is that? But it will happen to you. As I said, the idea is to let the thoughts go, and that becomes kind of a discipline of your own making. Centered around that sacred word that you choose to use to help you come back to your center. It's suggested that you do two sessions of 20 minutes each, twice a day. The morning one is fairly easy. I hear it from everybody. It starts my day off. I'm kind of free of my thoughts. I haven't gotten up and starting to get into my day or my planning, and I'm fairly really good at doing the morning one. That second one is a little difficult. Finding time for your second round of meditation of 20 minutes. And it's just a discipline. It's like coming to an AA meeting. You got to show up for drill. And I'm suggesting that it'll take a while to get used to meditation if you've never done it before. Our society, our culture seems to be married to noise, unwanted noise of all kinds, and when it gets silent, we find a way to fill it up with noise. It's amazing how that works, and it's also amazing the struggle to find that spot where you can be away from noise. It's absolutely necessary. There was a French mystic who died a while back in the 1960s, I believe, and she said that what's the word I'm looking for? Being alone without anybody around you is not the absence of people, it's the presence of God. That it's a little bit difficult to entertain the presence of God when you're in total turmoil. And if you're going through an emotional whammer jammer like we tend to do in our lives, that's when meditation becomes really important, but it also becomes difficult to do when you are consumed with an unwanted situation that is happening to you. Death in the family, divorce in the family, marriage in the family, equal and opposite stressors. You will find it hard to stay focused in meditation, but that's when it's needed the most. Now, if you stay true to this practice, like you come to AA, you show up for meetings, meditation is the same. You show up for meditation. You pick times for yourselves, and you'll have to experiment with those times. When am I free of the kids? When am I not concerned about worrying about work? Oh, that's a big attraction, distraction, aversion that'll rob you of your meditation focus. Finding those times are the same as finding a good meeting for yourself. You show up for drill. Now, here's the deal. I can guarantee you this. If you stick with it, meditation, centering prayer, will change your life. It will so improve the quality of your spiritual condition. And remember, that's how we stay sober, is contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Not, it doesn't say on condition of our spiritual, it says the maintenance of our spiritual condition. And that, my friends, is step 11 in action. The maintenance of my spiritual condition is contingent on me showing up for step 11. Prayer and meditation. Now, it's often been said around these meetings that prayer is talking to God and meditation is listening. It's a little deeper than that, but that's basically the deal. And going back to steps 1, 2, and 3, I can't, he can, I think I'll let him. The long and the short of the first three steps, and step 11 is how you get there. Hey, I'm right on the money with 30 minutes here. Thank you for, again, the pleasure and the privilege to be in front of you this morning. Keep coming back. You know what they say, it works if you work it. And it don't if you won't. So
thank you, Gordon.
You're back.
Thank you.